Good day, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the AtkinsRéalis Third Quarter 2025 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there'll be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you'll need to press star one one on your telephone. You will then hear an automated message advising your hand is raised. To withdraw your question, please press star one one again. Please be advised today's conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your speaker today, Denis Jasmin. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Kevin. Bonjour tout le monde. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. For those dialing in, we invite you to view the slide presentation that we have posted in the investors' section of our website, which we will refer to during this call. Today's call is also webcast. With me today are Ian Edwards, Chief Executive Officer, and Jeff Bell, Chief Financial Officer. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to one or two questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You're welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would like to draw your attention to slide two. Comments made on today's call may contain forward-looking information. This information, by its nature, is subject to assumptions, risks, and uncertainties, and as such, actual results may differ materially from the views expressed today. For further information on these assumptions, risks, and uncertainties, please consult the company's relevant filings on SEDAR+. These documents are also available on our website. Also, during the call, we may refer to certain non-IFRS financial measures. Reconciliation of these amounts to the corresponding IFRS financial measures are reflected in our earnings release and MD&A, which can be found on SEDAR+ and our website. Now I'll pass the call over to Ian Edwards. Ian?
Thank you, Denis. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm going to begin today's call by providing an overview of our company performance in the third quarter, including our record backlog and margin, as well as performance highlights across the engineering services regions and nuclear businesses. I'll then pass it back to Jeff to provide more detail on our financial results and our updated 2025 outlook before we open it up for questions. Let's get started on slide three. Our third quarter performance highlights our ability to both grow and operate more efficiently across the business. We delivered another strong quarter of services revenue growth, up 17% year-over-year, or 11% on an organic basis. Engineering services regions revenue reached a record high of $1.9 billion, while nuclear revenue organically grew 60% to a quarterly record high of $596 million. Linxon continues to perform well and organically grew 15%. We also had a strong increase in adjusted EBITDA from PS&PM of 21%, a record high adjusted EBITDA from PS&PM margin of 10%, highlighting the work that we have done across the business to improve margins. Our total backlog reached a new record high this quarter, as our expertise across engineering services and nuclear continues to be in demand. AtkinsRéalis services backlog recorded a 24% growth versus the backlog as of September 30, 2024. The continued revenue growth and increasing backlog in our nuclear business has led us to increase our nuclear revenue outlook to $2.2 billion-$2.3 billion for 2025. On the other hand, due to lower year-to-date revenue growth in our USLA and EMEA regions, we've decreased our 2025 organic revenue growth outlook in our engineering services regions business to a low single-digit year-over-year percentage increase. We expect the full-year impact of these changes on profitability to be neutral. Jeff will provide more details of this later. Subsequent to quarter close, we announced the acquisition of C2AE, which advances our land and expand strategy in the U.S. and is in line with our stated capital allocation priorities. Our pipeline of potential bolt-on acquisitions remains robust, and we would expect to announce further acquisitions in the coming quarters. We're extremely proud of our accomplishments this quarter, generating record revenues, backlog, and margins, while utilizing strong operating cash flow to invest in M&A opportunities to expand our footprint in geographical white spaces. Our delivering excellence, driving growth strategy is creating value for shareholders. Turning to slide four, revenue in our engineering services regions business increased 8% year-over-year. But if we exclude David Evans' revenues and positive FX impacts, organic revenue was basically flat. Segment adjusted EBITDA over net revenue margin was 17% for the third quarter, up 30 basis points versus the prior year period, as operating margin improvement initiatives are bearing fruit, specifically through optimized cost, enhanced bidding discipline, artificial intelligence, and continued leveraging of digital tools for more efficient project delivery. Notably, we continue to increase our backlog, which now stands at a new record high of $13 billion, representing an 8% increase versus our backlog as at September 30, 2024. Beginning on slide five, we provide an overview of each of our four regions and their performance this quarter. In Canada, revenue organically grew 1%, while segment adjusted EBITDA grew $36 million with a 17% margin, 180 basis points increase, highlighting our continued efforts on our margin improvement plan. Backlog grew 5% year-over-year and now stands at $7.8 billion. Given market dynamics, we are focusing on growing our presence in the buildings and places, transportation, industrials, power renewables, and defense end markets, as we believe these areas offer good opportunities in the near future. We saw growth this quarter in transportation and power renewables, while softness in the industrials end markets remain. Separately, recent NATO commitments by the Canadian government are likely to yield further opportunities for our defense expertise. And looking out, the opportunities that will come from Building Canada Act are set to have a positive impact on AtkinsRéalis. The government's focus on accelerating domestic funding for large-scale projects is exciting and due to our well-established foothold in the market and our historical success across the entire infrastructure lifecycle. We remain bullish about the near-term opportunities that may present themselves from this bill. In U.K. and Ireland, revenue grew 10% and organically grew 5% year-over-year, primarily driven by strong demand in aviation, water, and defense. Segment adjusted EBITDA grew $102 million in the quarter, representing an 18.6% EBITDA margin as the business continues to improve the efficiency of project delivery. Our concentration and flexibility in the region enable us to consistently position our people in areas with the highest demand, which helps underpin strong operating margin delivery. Backlog grew 15% year-on-year to approximately $1.9 billion, driven mainly by wins in the defense and transportation markets. Our expertise in water is creating significant opportunities with the AMP8 investment program, as evidenced by a recent win with the Anglia Water Services, representing a more than $1.5 billion opportunity over the next 15 years. As mentioned on prior calls, there have been several commitments by the UK government to increase funding for defense and infrastructure spending over the next decade. Demand in power and renewables is rising with the early stage activity in grid investments, while the established long-term UK industrial investment strategy will yield enhanced opportunities in the industrials end market. We have a strong and growing presence in UK and Ireland, and we are focusing our efforts on enhancing our capabilities across the transportation, defense, buildings and places, water, power renewables, and industrial end markets, as they present the most opportunity over the next several years. Turning to slide seven, our U.S. land and expand strategy continues to make strides, and we recently announced the acquisition of C2AE, which strengthens our presence in the upper Midwest and expands capabilities in key growth end markets such as water. During the third quarter, revenue increased 36%. However, excluding David Evans acquisition and favorable FX impacts, organic revenue was flat year over year, as softness within our global minerals and metals sector weighed on the results. If we exclude that, if we exclude our global minerals and metals business, our underlying engineering services business in the US organically grew about 4%. We experienced slower framework agreement conversion to projects and procurement disruptions, which were primary growth detractors in the quarter. But that being said, we believe these headwinds are temporary, and we remain confident in the near-term and long-term growth opportunities in the US for our services. Segment adjusted EBITDA was $66 million, which translates to a 15.8% operating margin, an improvement of 30 basis points on the previous year. Margin improvement was driven by sustained project execution and overhead control. The backlog increased 11% year over year to nearly $1.8 billion as we continue to prioritize client engagement and leverage our unique end-to-end capabilities. We continue to build our backlog in the US, particularly with the Departments of Transportation. We have continued to deepen our collaboration with David Evans' team to win incremental new work, which the pipeline of opportunities continues to increase. Financially and operationally, the business is performing in line or ahead of our expectations. While we are not directly affected by the recent US government shutdown, federal funding to states has slowed, impacting some of our client at state level. As a result, we're experiencing some delays in receiving contract awards and commencing projects. In the meantime, our pipeline is growing, and we are actively investing organically and inorganically to expand our position in the marketplace. And regardless of the macro dynamics, our conviction in the long-term growth of our USLA business in end markets remains strong. We are strategically positioning ourselves to win new business in the transportation, buildings and places, industrials, minerals and metals, and water end markets, given the near opportunities we see. In EMEA, revenue declined 9%, while segment adjusted EBITDA declined to $34 million, representing a 16% EBITDA margin over net revenue. Revenue declined primarily due to lower volumes on large-scale building and places projects in the Middle East, where our involvement has reduced compared to this time last year. The total backlog in EMEA was approximately $1.5 billion, up 15% versus the third quarter of 2024, mainly driven by new bookings in the buildings and places and industrials end market. In the Middle East, while opportunities still present themselves in buildings and places, we're seeing increased demand for our services in large-scale transportation projects, such as our focus is on transportation projects in the near term. But we will continue to closely monitor substantial building opportunities, such as preparing for the 2034 World Cup in Saudi Arabia. In Asia, we're seeing sustained investments in infrastructure and transportation, mainly fueled by Hong Kong's northern metropolis. In Australia, we are focused on expanding our presence through opportunities that leverage our global expertise in transportation, power, and defense. I'd like to now move to slide 9 and discuss our third quarter results for our nuclear business. The business continues to demonstrate exceptional growth, achieving organic revenue increase of 60% compared to the third quarter of 2024. Our nuclear backlog totaled $5.4 billion, 68% higher than our backlog as at September 30, 2024. Segment adjusted EBIT grew 44% to $66 million, and segment adjusted EBIT margin was approximately 11%. segment adjusted EBITDA grew 40% year-over-year, and the margin now stands at 26%, almost 300 basis points higher than this time last year. On slide 10, we highlight the achievements across our nuclear CANDU and services portfolios. In our CANDU business, we have several projects ramping up that give us excitement about the near-term revenues. We renewed a 10-year master service agreement with Bruce Power. We are continuing to work on C3, C4 at Cernavoda in Romania, and we're making excellent progress on the Pickering life extension. Our optimism in the continued advancement of CANDU projects is further underpinned by the recent issuance of more than $2 billion in purchase orders by AtkinsRéalis to over 548 companies in the CANDU supply chain during the last 18 months, with 90% of these orders to Canadian suppliers. CANDU is a world-class homegrown nuclear technology, fueling high-paying jobs and economic growth for Canadian workers and businesses. We are in ongoing discussions with several countries across the globe regarding potential new builds. While they are taking place, we remain focused on the development of the CANDU Monarch. For services, we continue to offer new build support at Hinkley Point C and Sizewell C. Also in the UK, we're driving growth in the region through our decommissioning waste management services at Sellafield, for which we've just recently renewed our framework agreement. Lastly, we extended our global strategic partnership with robotic developer Kinova for 3 years. Our collaboration is showcasing cutting-edge robotic innovation to perform high-performance remote operations at nuclear facilities. This technology will enable cost-effective operations at reactors and, more importantly, enhance the safety of this work. 2025 has been an exceptional year for our nuclear business. The revised revenue guidance for the year I mentioned earlier exceeds our original estimate at the beginning of the year by more than 30%, further highlighting the opportunities in front of us to generate real revenue today across the nuclear sector. Turning to slide 11, you can see our pictorial reminder of these near-term CANDU revenue opportunities within our nuclear business. The potential CANDU contracts you see on this slide showcase a massive opportunity for AtkinsRéalis and could deliver significant growth for the foreseeable future. Our $5.4 billion nuclear backlog achievement is just the start, as customers are continuing to recognize our nuclear expertise. We've been working hard to bolster our backlog with high-quality wins. Total backlog does not include follow-on phases for our recent wins and a very small amount of CANDU new builds. We cannot overstate the massive opportunity in front of AtkinsRéalis in the nuclear sector. Now moving to slide 12 and our Linxon LSTK projects and capital businesses. In our Linxon segment, revenue organically grew 15% year over year. Linxon realized 230 basis points of EBIT margin expansion year over year as operational improvements continued to positively flow through the business. Backlog increased 50% to a record $2.4 billion at the end of the quarter. We are seeing backlog improvement across the Americas, Europe, and Middle East. On LSTK project segment, adjusted EBIT was in line with expectations. And with that, I'll now turn it over to Jeff to discuss our financial results and our 2025 outlook.
Thank you, Ian, and good morning, everyone. Turning to slide 14, total IFRS revenues increased 15% year-over-year, totaling $2.8 billion, which included revenue increases of 8% in engineering services, 62% in nuclear, and 19% in Linxon. Total segment adjusted EBIT for the quarter increased 9% to $269 million, as the decrease in capital segment adjusted EBIT was more than offset by a $41 million increase in AtkinsRéalis services. Corporate SG&A expenses from PS&PM totaled $26 million in the quarter, in line with the previous year. We continue to anticipate these expenses should be between $120 and $130 million for the full year 2025. Note that following the sale of our interest in the Highway 407 ETR, corporate SG&A expenses from capital decreased to $1.5 million this quarter and are expected to remain at this level. Net financial expenses for the quarter were $22 million, compared to $41 million in Q3 2024, mainly due to the repayment of all outstanding borrowings under the La Caisse loan and the company's term loan in the second quarter. We believe Q4 will be a similar amount. The income tax expense was lower than Q3 2024, mainly due to revised estimates on certain tax liabilities and geographic mix. The tax rate for adjusted PS&PM net income was approximately 16% in the quarter and 17% year-to-date, and therefore we now expect the tax rate for the full year 2025 on our adjusted PS&PM net income to be approximately 20%. The IFRS diluted EPS this quarter increased by 49% to 88 cents, compared to 59 cents in Q3 2024, while the adjusted EPS from PS&PM increased 68% to $1.06 per diluted share, compared to 63 cents in the third quarter last year. And as Ian mentioned, our backlog ended the quarter at a record high of $21 billion, 23% higher than at the end of September 2024, with strong increases across all our businesses, engineering services, nuclear, and Linxon. Let's now move on to slide 15 and free cash flow. Net cash generated from operating activities totaled $123 million for the quarter. This was mainly driven by a stronger AtkinsRéalis services EBITDA delivery, partially offset by the timing of working capital usage and an LSTK project's cash usage. We continue to expect operating cash flow to be in excess of $300 million for the full year 2025. After CapEx of $45 million, which included $15 million for the development of Monarch and the payment of lease liabilities of $22 million, our free cash flow stood at $56 million for the quarter. I'd like to now turn to my final slide, slide 16. As you have heard Ian say on nuclear, the demand for our services continues to grow, and our backlog is at a new record high. Therefore, we are again increasing our nuclear revenue outlook to between $2.2 and $2.3 billion for the full year 2025, from the previous range of $2 billion and $2.1 billion that we outlined last quarter. On the other hand, we are decreasing the engineering services region's 2025 organic revenue growth outlook over 2024 to a low single-digit percentage, from the previous range of mid-single-digit percentage, reflecting lower-than-expected revenue growth in the USLA and EMEA segments. Note that we continue to expect David Evans revenues, which is excluded from this organic revenue growth, to be around $300 million for 2025. We remain confident in our medium-term target of 8% plus revenue growth for engineering services, as outlined in our Delivering Excellence Drive and Growth strategy, and see the lower growth rate in 2025 as temporary in nature. All other financial outlook metrics for full year 2025 are maintained. And with that, I'll now hand the presentation back to Ian.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. We're extremely proud of our success in the third quarter, achieving several record results on the top line and on the margin front across our engineering services and nuclear businesses. The combination of these two businesses provide us with a unique competitive mix. Also, the improvement on margin stems from the operational plan we put in place at our June 20th real tangible results. No matter the geopolitical tension that may exist or arise in the future, global energy transition and infrastructure redevelopment are fueling growth in our markets, where we have built a strong foundation, or are landing and expanding. Our balance sheet and appetite for growth puts us at a distinct position to capitalize on M&A opportunities that may arise in this current macroeconomic landscape. Our team is working tirelessly to continue executing our delivering excellence and driving growth strategy. And I want to thank our 40,000 employees for their hard work and dedication. We are proud of our performance today in 2025 and of actively positioning the company to capture real revenue across our engineering services business in 26 and beyond. So with that, let's open it up for questions.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a question or a comment at this time, please press star 11 on your telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to move yourself from the queue, please press star 11 again. We'll pause for a moment while we compile our Q&A roster. Our first question comes from Chris Murray with ATB Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Morning. Maybe starting with the organic growth profile. So a couple questions around this. One, you talked about it slowing a little bit in Q3, and just wondering a couple things. So one, as we go into Q4, you called it a couple different spaces, but you know, just kind of curious to see, are you seeing in Q4 an extension of the same trends, or is there something different? Just wondering maybe if there's anything around the U.S. government shutdown that's slowing things and leading to your view. And then more importantly, I think you described this as sort of a temporary slowdown. Can you maybe give us some more color on why you have the confidence that as we enter 2026, that you think it should maybe revert back to what we've talked about, kind of those historic mid-single digit levels for the engineering services business?
Yeah, for sure. And this is presumably the questions relate to engineering services, right?
It does, yes.
Yeah. So look, I mean, obviously, through the kind of journey of 2025, we've had some challenges to overcome. But they are specific challenges. That they're not underlying issues that are going to take us through into the future. And those specific reasons are, as we've said in previous quarters, we've had some pretty hard year-over-year comps because of really three large projects in our Canada region, in our Middle East region, and in our mining and metals. But we've worked our way through that. So those are behind us now. And then there's clearly been some kind of disruption to the U.S. market, which I'll come back with. So the quarter, we've actually seen a continuation in Q3 of disruptions in the U.S. And as we think about those disruptions going forward, which have really been about states sitting on project releases and sitting on project awards, it's the volatility connected to tariffs, the shutdown, the big beautiful bill. But what we're seeing now is that actually being overcome, and we're seeing definitely in Q4 a return to wins, a return to orders coming through. And you've got to remember that the fundamentals in the U.S. that drive our markets in energy and in replacement of infrastructure resilience work are all really good. And also, we've got to remember the IIJA is only actually about 40% expended so far. So, and that bill has still got support. So that's specifically in the USLA region. And in EMEA, we've actually kind of started reprioritizing the way we look at EMEA, because we were heavily dependent on some very big jobs in KSA in Saudi Arabia. And one of those jobs, we've closed out phase one, and we're seeing a lot more diversified opportunity, both in the UAE and both in transportation. So we're pretty confident going forward in that region as well. So looking at our backlog, and particularly looking at a backlog I won't canter through each region because I'm sure there'll be another kind of question on that. But if you look at our backlog, it's 8% up. That's a leading indicator for me. And as we look at performance in Q4, we're getting back to growth. And obviously, our revised guidance isn't zero, but we will end with positive growth. And that will take quite a bounce back in Q4 to get there, which we're confident we're going to do. And then moving into 2026, obviously, we're looking at development of pipeline and our kind of preparation for the Q4 outlook already. And we're seeing pretty good growth, and we're fairly confident going forward that we're going to return some good growth numbers. So it's the few specific challenges this year, but very confident going forward that we're going to return to growth in ES.
All right. That's helpful. Thank you. And then maybe turning to nuclear, a couple of pieces of this question. So first of all, I wonder if you can maybe add your take. There's been a lot of discussion around nuclear services more broadly, particularly in the U.S. with some of the SMRs. But you've also got, I think, lots of opportunity even with the CANDU technology and other things that you've been able to work on. Can you maybe walk through maybe high level your thoughts around the nuclear industry and penetration of nuclear and how you think Atkins maybe fits into this whole ecosystem from the perspective of either supporting some of these newer proponents with smaller technologies or having the Monarch able to address different segments of the market? So just thoughts about how we should think about where Atkins can go in the nuclear business over and above where it is today would be helpful. So I'll leave it there.
All right. This is probably going to be a fairly long answer, but that's fine. It's a good start. Look, I mean, we're in a super cycle. The two world conferences were in Q3 in nuclear, one in London called the Symposium and one in Paris called the Exhibition. And what's really clear to me, having attended and spoke at those conferences, is AtkinsRéalis and the CANDU technology operates on the world stage as a leader. And I think that's the first thing I would say. And when we look at our business, as I've said before, we're not just a nuclear OEM of CANDU. We are a full-service nuclear business in addition to being an OEM in CANDU. And this puts us at a very differentiated place in the nuclear market. And I'll call out a couple of our differentiators because these are really important. And I'm not sure that they're fully understood by everybody. The first thing is that capacity for nuclear companies is going to be everything. That there's clearly a strong demand. All countries that signed up to the tripling are looking for new nuclear. Hyperscalers are looking for nuclear. It's very, very real. We have got 40,000 professional people in our company. 6,000 to 7,000 of those are nuclear professionals because we've built capacity through the Life Extension Program here in Canada. That's not unique because the French and the Chinese clearly have a big nuclear program too, but it puts us up there at the top with capacity. We have a supply chain in Canada that's got 90,000 people in it doing manufacturing and actually professional skilled labor in the nuclear industry. That, again, is not unique, but it's up there with some of the best countries in the world that can deploy nuclear technology. We have a world-class technology in CANDU, and it's differentiated because it uses natural uranium, which gives countries energy security because an abundance of natural uranium. There is not an abundance of processed uranium. In fact, there's a shortage. And we can produce medical isotopes, which countries and customers are very interested in. And Canada has a unique advantage. in the way that it operates with countries around the world. Because where we've built Can-Do in India, Korea, China, Romania, Argentina, we've left behind decades of relationships between Canada and those countries and decades of relationships between AtkinsRéalis and the utilities, which is world-renowned, and it's recognized by new countries that are coming into the technology. So I guess the last point, you know, I would say, I mean, and just to remind everybody on slide 11, this growth that we're experiencing right now is no new build in it. And we're all over the map now trying to sell the Can-Do technology. And we're getting very good traction. Clearly, there's nothing to announce, but in the coming years, there will be. And our services business is a full services business that supports SMRs in the U.K., in the U.S., and here in Canada. We have a business in services which supports EDF at Hinkley and Sizewell with hundreds and hundreds of engineers deployed on those jobs. We do processing of waste, and we're even in fusion. So all in all, what I'm trying to explain here is we've got a really differentiated business here. And I'm glad you asked the question at the beginning. I know that was a long answer, but that is what, you know, is the reality of where we're at.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. I'll pass the line.
One moment for our next question. Our next question comes from Krista Friesen with CIBC. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Maybe just going back to the first question and looking at EMEA, can you provide a little bit more color just on the margins in that segment and how you're expecting those to trend over the next year and maybe what you've put in place to kind of help those margins?
Yeah. So let me do the market and how we're repositioning the business. And Jeff will come in on the margin front and how we see that kind of in our margin expansion program. So, I mean, basically, our EMEA business historically has been heavily focused on Saudi Arabia. Now, Saudi Arabia itself has done some reprioritization of spend and of projects they're going to focus on. They want to focus on Riyadh. They're focusing on the World Cup 34 and Expo 30. So it's not that the place has come flat from a market potential. It's actually just reprioritized. And we're really well positioned. But we have finished out a huge project that has given us the kind of decline in that KSA business this year. Now, the UAE is also really interesting because they are actually seeing themselves compete with Saudi Arabia. And they're putting investment back into the UAE, both in buildings and places, but interestingly, in transportation. And we're bidding numerous kind of rail jobs there right now. And obviously, we've got that global capability, so it's easy for us to be agile and kind of exploit those opportunities as the market kind of pivots and the opportunities change. But as far as the EMEA region is concerned and its growth plan in the future, we're really opening up Australia and the Asia region. And Australia is really important to us in terms of our energy capability and our defense capability, where a lot of the funds are going now from government, where historically it was all about transportation. So we feel we've got a really good opportunity there. And then in Asia, Hong Kong, we've always had a good business. They are developing a new city on the border with China called the Northern Metropolis, and we're winning work there now. So we're pretty optimistic about the region of EMEA. But obviously, we've had a bit of a reprioritization and challenges to work through this year. So we're pretty confident going forward. And Jeff, maybe you could just talk to the kind of margin expansion.
Right. Yeah. So I think what we'll see, and as Ian has said, you know, we're transitioning the business, particularly in the Middle East. There have been some, you know, very large, very profitable projects there. And so as we, you know, head into next year, you know, we'll have to see the business transition, you know, away from those. So we may see a bit of headwind margin-wise in the Middle East. But as Ian said, as we grow other parts of the EMEA region in Australia, in Asia, you know, those are good margin geographies. And as they start to take a larger proportion of that region, you know, that will help underpin margin delivery in EMEA there. So, over the longer term, we don't see any reason why EMEA, wouldn't be part of our 17%-18% target in the long term.
Okay, thank you. That's great color. And then maybe just, sorry?
No, yep, you go. Sorry.
Oh, just one last one for me, maybe a higher level one on nuclear. Obviously, you've increased your guidance significantly throughout the year, I think roughly 36% from what you started with. Has the mix evolved as you have expected it to evolve for your nuclear business? And does it change how you think about the margins at all over the medium term?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, I think as the years evolved, what we've been awarded in terms of life extension and services businesses is not different from what we expected, but it has come sooner. And even the progress on the Pickering life extension, we're getting better progress than we thought. And also, at the beginning of these life extension projects or any kind of nuclear power project, there's a lot of procurement you've got to put in place for long lead items where the margins on that work are not as good as the actual engineering and execution work that we do ourselves. So I think that's probably where we've evolved through the year, and you're seeing that in our results. But that's good news. I mean, things are happening quicker than we thought they would happen.
For sure. Thank you. I'll leave it there.
Thank you.
One moment for our next question. Our next question comes from Yuri Lynk with Canaccord Genuity. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning.
Maybe one for Jeff. It looks like to get to the midpoint of your engineering services regions EBITDA margin guidance for the year, 16%-17%, it's going to require 80-ish basis points step up in margin in the fourth quarter, which is not the typical seasonal pattern that we've seen in the past. So just wondering if there's anything unique in play in the fourth quarter that would drive the margin sequentially higher.
Yeah, thanks. As you say, I'll take that, Yuri. So we do typically see stronger margins in the second half of the year than the first half of the year. You saw that in Q3. And we remain very confident in delivering that 16%-17% for the full year. And as you say, that does mean strong fourth quarter operating margins. But with all the work we've done on our initiatives through the year and that you've seen coming through in Q3, we see an absolute continuation of that in the fourth quarter. And that's everything from continued better and more sophisticated pricing with our clients. It's better productivity and utilization. It's higher utilization of our global technology center in India. And the continued work on our overhead cost base. So the work that we've delivered through the year and in the third quarter, we see that absolutely continuing in the fourth quarter and remain very confident in delivering that uplift in Q4.
Okay. Second one is just on the U.S. region within engineering services, USLA. Can you talk a little bit about when you've done your portfolio reviews, including Linxon and Capital and stuff like that, why the mining business, the mining and minerals business never didn't come up in those? Well, I'm sure they did, but you decided to keep it. And I guess, why keep that business? Is it scaled properly to compete with the bigger mining-focused engineering houses? And is having it in the U.S. segment appropriate, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, all our businesses, we review regularly. I mean, we review the whole mix of portfolio to make sure the long-term strategy of the company has got the right portfolio of businesses going forward. And absolutely, the minerals and metals business, we've reviewed a couple of times, and we will continue to do that to make sure that it can get to the profitability and the growth that makes it meaningful and at scale. It was a business that we had to repurpose from an EPC business long time ago into a pure play services business. And that's taken time, frankly. But I think we're getting some good traction now, and I think we're getting some better profitability. We are winning some work. In actual fact, we've been picking work up recently in the sector. Whether it belongs in USLA, you know, it's just a question of putting it with one of the presidents. And it is a global business because, you know, the business has to be client focused. You know, there are, you know, a handful of large mining operators around the world. So you can't really regionalize the business. It's got to be a global business that follows clients, basically. So we're happy with it right now. It's in the business right now. We do see this need around the world for critical minerals. You know, we don't really do coal. We do the specialized critical mineral kind of mining projects, supporting customers. And we're happy with it, where it is right now.
Okay, that's fair. I'll turn it over. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
One moment for our next question. Our next question comes from Sabahat Khan with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks and good morning. Just, I guess, looking ahead to 26 a little bit, just on the broader setup, you obviously indicated that the IIJ, a good chunk of it hasn't been spent and or even allocated. Can you just talk about the outlook for rest of that larger infrastructure bill to be rolled out and sort of your early thoughts on that region on a potential new infrastructure bill at some point? Just trying to gauge the yeah. demand drivers for the U.S. market for next year. Thanks.
So look, there's a couple of things that are specific to ourselves, which I'll probably say at the beginning. Our business has got 6,500 people in it. You know, some of our peers have got over 20,000 people in their businesses. So the way I think about our strategy in the US is that we've got a long way to go and a long runway to go. Our ambition in the near term, 1 to 2 years, is to get the business in the top 10, which would require us to have 10,000 people or more. And obviously beyond that, in the longer term, we want to be in the top five. We want to be a serious player in the US. The fundamentals of the US market are really, really strong. The need for energy security. They've got an aging infrastructure problem in the US with actually a $3.7 trillion gap in infrastructure investment, which ultimately will play through to a deterioration of roads, water, rail infrastructure, which they will have to spend on to bring it back to operable state. Resilience work in the US for flooding, flood defense, and hurricanes, unfortunately, present, you know, an opportunity, obviously at the expense of disasters, which is not great, but it's an opportunity for us. So the IIJA is 40% allocated and spent. That will continue to fund states. For ourselves, I don't think the one big beautiful bill will have a specific impact on us. I mean, I think it will have an impact on industrials, perhaps, and maybe the energy sector, which will have less impact for us, I think. But we're really confident in our strategy, and we will continue to invest in M&A, and we'll continue to land and expand across the states. As I said before, you know, the issues, we really do see them as temporary, and we are actually seeing an increase of flow through now, particularly as we're getting into the fourth quarter and we're picking up work. So all in all, you know, it's probably been a bit of a disruptive time this last year, but I think we're going to get back some good growth opportunities.
Great. Thanks for the color. And then just on the sort of the last comment around M&A, just given where the balance sheet is, you were active on the buyback this year. How do you think about potentially reactivating that buyback, just given the number of M&A opportunities out there? Just how are you going to balance the two at this point in the cycle? Thanks very much.
Yeah, it's Jeff. Why don't I take that? I think as we've said earlier, and to what you've referenced, we have taken advantage of that share buyback significantly over the course of the year. And as we said in the last quarter, our focus really from a capital allocation perspective is around growing and investing in the business, primarily through M&A and inorganic activity. And as Ian has said, we see real opportunity to continue to land and expand in the U.S. We see opportunity in other geographies or areas of capability where we have white space. And the pipeline of opportunities is really strong. We're seeing lots of good potential organizations that we're in discussions with, we're in processes with. And therefore, we're very confident in our ability to continue to deploy capital in a value-creating way, in a strongly value-creating way like that going forward. So that will continue to be our area of focus.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
One moment for our next question. Our next question comes from Benoit Poirier with Desjardins. Your line is open.
Yeah, good morning, Ian. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning.
Just on the nuclear, it seems like your main Canadian nuclear reactor competitor has signed a MOU agreement with for a potential large-scale Alberta nuclear project you were previously involved in. So can you give us an update on the current competitive dynamics in the Canadian nuclear market?
I actually thought that announcement that came out made them American, but I understand exactly what you mean. You're talking about our competitor's announcement to partner with the U.S. government to deploy reactors in the U.S. And I think this is a good thing. I mean, I think it just shows the momentum in the nuclear industry. I mean, clearly, the U.S. government is highly committed to new nuclear. There are executive orders that are signed, and I think that partnership is a really smart partnership for the deployment of new nuclear in the U.S. And as I've said in the past, I mean, capacity is everything. And initiatives like that to enable capacity to be built and meet the demands of the new nuclear market is very good. But for ourselves, we are Canadian. Our business is Canadian supply chain, Canadian jobs. And the technology is Canadian. It's actually owned by the Canadian government, but we have the sole rights to deploy it. And all the reactors in Canada right now are Canadian. And can do. So the way that I would see this is from a competitive perspective in Canada is I would hope that our utilities and our provinces here in Canada choose a technology which is Canadian, which will supply jobs to Canadians, because no other technology will do that. The jobs will go down south with the company that you're referring to for manufacturing and for engineering. So from a competitive edge, we kind of hope that sense will prevail and we'll support our own technology here in Canada, if that's at the heart of the question.
Yeah, okay. That's great color, Jeff. And obviously, you have an ongoing discussion with several countries on new builds with CANDU. There's a big potential, obviously. I'm just wondering if is it dependent on your ability to secure first the Monarch in Canada, or any color about the potential timing for new builds, what we should expect in terms of timing for announcing new builds?
Yeah. So outside of Canada, I mean, obviously, we're working hard in Canada. We are in competition. I mean, that's a fact. But we're working hard in Canada for deployment of the Monarch. Outside of Canada, we're seeing numerous opportunities in Eastern Europe and potentially Asia. Actually, the technology that is wanted is actually our EC6 existing technology, which is a 700-megawatt reactor. And the grids in the countries that we're discussing are more suited to a smaller reactor, which is a different situation than it is in Canada. And the other advantage of the EC6, it's deployable now. It's existing technology. It's the technology that we're delivering in Romania for the two new builds in Romania. So, I mean, there's nothing to announce today. We're working very hard. We've got very detailed technical and commercial meetings ongoing with several countries. The first stage of anything would be an MOU announcement, and then there would be a development through to what we would call a FEED contract or an initial contract, which, again, it would probably be certainly back end of next year if that was to happen. But we're working hard on these things. And there are numerous opportunities, to be clear, for the EC6 out there.
Okay. Thank you very much for the time.
One moment for our next question. Our next question comes from Michael Tupholme with TD Cowen. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Ian, you spoke earlier in the call on several occasions about your capabilities in the defense arena and some of the opportunities you see there. I'm wondering if you can add on to that and speak in a little bit more detail about exactly where you see AtkinsRéalis as having strong capabilities in defense and to what extent you think we could see defense be a growth area that really contributes in 2026 and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, our current real strength in defense is in the U.K. And where we play is in the facilities to operate, maintain, and house assets. So assets being aircraft, submarines, ships, even people, barracks, and the like. And what we've experienced in the U.K. over the last few years is a fairly significant upgrade of existing dockyards, existing airfields to take on the new evolution of assets. A good example of that and how we will move from the U.K. to other countries would be the AUKUS submarine program, where we are the engineer of physical infrastructure assets to support that program in the U.K. And having got that experience, we are in a very good place, I think, in Australia, where the AUKUS submarine is being deployed also. And they're going through a big program to build ports, actually, to support, house, and maintain their first nuclear submarine in Australia. And then same in Canada. I mean, new aircraft in Canada, new ships in Canada, new potential submarines in Canada. All of the physical infrastructure will need upgrading to be able to operate and maintain those assets. And probably a fact that really isn't well known is that when you buy a bunch of assets, in the overall cost of deploying those assets, well over half of it is in the physical infrastructure and the operations and OpEx to operate that over its life. So there is quite an investment that goes into the kind of non-equipment asset when defense programs are being put through. So clearly, with the U.K., Australia, and Canada having increased commitments, those are the countries that we see the best opportunity for ourselves.
Okay. That's perfect. Thank you. And then as a follow-up, you had a number of questions earlier about the organic growth in the ESR segment. Wondering if you can talk a little bit about David Evans. I know at the moment it's contributing to acquisition growth, but within its underlying operations, what have you seen in the third quarter in terms of its own underlying organic growth?
Yeah, I mean, good growth. They continue to perform in line with our expectations. The integration piece and the cooperation between our U.S. business and David Evans is going well. And probably going forward, the most important thing is that we've developed a pipeline of opportunities that actually David Evans wouldn't have been able to bid them because of scale, and we wouldn't have been able to bid them because of a lack of local connectivity and presence and people. So that pipeline now, you know, it goes well into 2026 and it's being executed together. So we're actually, you know, putting teams on those bids, which are joint teams at this stage, and we would hope to start winning work, which is beyond kind of the ability that David Evans would have had on their own. And those revenue synergies were part of the whole thesis of buying David Evans in the first place.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll leave it there.
One moment for our next question. Our next question comes from Jonathan Goldman with Scotiabank. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my questions.
Morning.
Good morning. You revised the organic growth guidance in engineering services to low single digit. That does seem to imply a pretty significant growth in Q4, double-digit growth. I know part of that's just an easy comp last year, but what visibility do you have as we sit here today on getting to that sort of level of growth in Q4?
Yes, Jeff, why don't I take that? We have really good visibility, Jonathan, and you are right. You know, we are lapping, you know, a less strong quarter in, you know, in the previous year. So that clearly underpins, you know, some of that growth increase quarter-over-quarter we'd expect in Q4. But as you heard from Ian earlier, you know, we are finishing off, you know, we finished off some of the projects that were creating some of that headwind, but we are seeing, you know, real increase in activity in the markets that we're in. You know, we're seeing higher levels of backlog. We are, you know, seeing contracts and framework agreements that we've now won, you know, that we have won that had some delay, you know, it was particularly true in the U.S., now actually turning into revenue. So, you know, now that we're, you know, the better part of, you know, 6 weeks, halfway through the quarter, you know, we are definitely seeing an uptick in, you know, contracts into revenue, you know, higher utilization and productivity. And so, you know, we therefore, you know, very confident in that return to growth, in that return to growth for, that underpins that overall full year guidance of growth.
Okay, that's helpful. Maybe, I guess, talking about the backlog, engineering services kind of flat quarter on quarter. Is some of that maybe timing related and kind of can mirror the cadence that you're seeing on the top line organic growth guide, but on the backlog side as well?
Yeah, a bit of that. But I think, you know, and it's why we, you know, we've seen this over the last two or three quarters, just this lengthening of clients, you know, taking, you know, pieces of work that we've won and just taking disproportionately longer to turn that into actual purchase orders or statements of work that we execute against. You know, now we're seeing that, you know, starting to flow a lot more like we, you know, had seen previously.
Okay, that's really helpful and makes a lot of sense. And I guess maybe a higher level one for you, Ian. You know, the 40% of IIJA money that's only been spent so far, you know, it does seem to set up well for the next few years. But is there a risk that the balance of the money does not get deployed, given all the uncertainty in the market and kind of things that are happening with the U.S. administration?
Well, there's always a risk. But what we're hearing and what we understand is that the bill has got support and that the bill is necessary to try and fill this infrastructure investment gap that is across the country.
Okay, that makes sense. Thanks for taking my questions.
One moment for our next question. Our next question comes from Devin Dodge with BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning. Thanks for squeezing me in here. was going to ask a question on nuclear. So the 2027 revenue target, $2.2 billion-$2.5 billion, and you're in the low end of that range in 2025. So just wondering if we should be expecting revenue growth to be, we'll say, relatively more muted in 2026 and 2027 off a pretty high base in 2025, or should we be assuming there's some conservatism still baked into the 2027 target?
So obviously, we've seen phenomenal growth year-over-year, 2024, 2025. And we will continue to grow revenues, even with the backlog we already have. And on slide 11, you can see that sort of visibility of the follow-on phases that will fuel our revenues and backlog through to 2027. But we're not going to see the kind of growth that we've seen year-over-year, 2024 to 2025, because we're obviously comparing next year against very good growth in 2025. You will see growth, but it will be very different than you've seen this year. I mean, and also, I would say that, repeat what I said before, that on the slide 11, the backlog and the near-term revenues are really about the new build at Cernavoda and about the life extension projects. If and when we start winning further new builds, the revenues at the beginning will be quite low because the engineering phase and the feasibility phase of these projects are not going to bring significant revenues until towards the end of this decade, where they really will bring significant revenues. So the way we see it is we've got great growth potential for the medium term in this business through into the next decade, but it's not going to be what you've seen recently.
Yeah. I mean, fair enough. I mean, but do you see maybe a mix shift more towards, we'll say, services versus procurement as you think about 2026 and 2027?
Well, I see both, actually. I mean, the CANDU technology, obviously, as I said, we're in discussions in Canada. We're in discussions around the world for new builds. But the services business, which supports other technologies and decommissioning and waste management and even fusion programs, is also winning work. And so the whole industry is really going through this supercycle, and we're seeing good opportunities all around. And our U.S. business is relatively small right now, but with the very strong commitment in the U.S., we're taking the CANDU technology through the licensing process to ensure that we are able, if utilities and clients want Canadian CANDU technology in the U.S., we're able to deploy it there as well. So I think the whole industry is pretty buoyant.
Okay. Fair enough. And then switching over to maybe engineering services, obviously, it seems like a pretty active M&A market there. What do you see as the drivers for sellers coming to the market now, and what's your pitch to them to select Atkins to be the buyer of choice?
Yeah. I mean, at the scale of deals that we're doing at the moment, I think owners of privately owned companies at the thousand or-ish size, they get to a point where they've got to do something different to continue to grow, either get investment from private equity or join a strategic such as ourselves. And I think the advantage, particularly in the U.S. for ourselves, is that we've got a lot of white space geographically. So they're not going to get absorbed into a machine that gives them no unity and gives them no kind of identification of what they have become and what they are. So for our strategy, it's a matter of stitching together geographic targets to give us a complete picture across the U.S. And something like David Evans, there was high competition for that acquisition, but we managed to work together to ensure that what they wanted for their future and what we wanted for our future became aligned. Now, it doesn't always work. I mean, But the good news in the U.S. is there's numerous targets that are in that situation, like numerous, and that are continually coming onto the market. And then, of course, you've got the recycled assets from private equity that come onto the market at the end of that investment cycle. So it's a very buoyant and quite exciting market for us at the moment. But that's our strategy.
Okay, good color. And maybe just one quick clarification, and apologies if I missed it, but are you still expecting to reach the targeted 1 to 2 turns for net debt EBITDA by the end of 2026?
Yeah, we didn't comment on it, but I would say our comments remain the same that we laid out at Q2 and that I commented to then, is that largely we expect to deploy capital in line with the capital allocation framework we laid out, such that, you know, by the end of 2026, you know, we'd at least be at the, you know, around the bottom end of the range of our 1 to 2 times leverage.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. I'll turn it over.
Thank you.
I'm not showing any further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the call back to Dennis Jasmine for any further remarks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us today. If you have further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's presentation. You may now disconnect and have a wonderful day.